Welcome to the Unbreakable Mindset Podcast, your burst of weekly inspiration to keep your mindset on track to manifest your greatest desires. I am Jude Dawn, your host, a world-renowned mindset coach, helping my clients and now you, the listener, to break free of the mental struggle, find contentment, meaning, and purpose in your life. Welcome back, everyone. This is episode 35. I had some issues with the episode I put out last week. Like, what was going on? I put it out on the Monday instead of the Tuesday. I didn't have my little jingle at the start or at the end. Like, producer Pete, if he was listening, if you're listening now, all I can say is I'm sorry. You taught us well and I let you down. But let's look at who didn't let me down. Wait for it. I am pleased to say that I have some listeners' questions. I've got a handful of questions. So what I'm going to do is just kind of do one question a week. One of the questions I'm actually going to turn into a long podcast, so that might come out next week. So the first question I'm going to go with is from Caitlin from Newcastle, who messaged me on Instagram, and she kind of worded it just to kind of say that she does believe in manifestation. But she doesn't really have a process of like sitting down and doing like meditations or affirmations. And is this okay that she's not doing that? So that's kind of the question. My response to that, and actually Mart and I were talking about this yesterday, Mart from Canny Crystals. We were kind of like saying, like, you know, is it needed when you are getting the things that you want? Is it needed to do that kind of focused attention every day? And I guess there's two answers to this. One, I was watching something that Rhonda Byrne did of author of The Secret and the Magic, etc. And she did this live and she was talking about, I think somebody must have asked a very similar question. And she'd said, no, you shouldn't be doing it every day, because if you've put it out to the universe, then if you're asking for it day after day, means that you don't believe it's coming. Now, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I think when you are first starting out to ask for something, if you're asking for it anyway, you probably have that underlying, like, oh my God, what happens if it doesn't happen kind of feeling. And if it's something that you haven't got and you want it, then, you know, you need to do that kind of core mindset work to be able to sit in that space and really visualize that it's going to happen. And that takes time. That takes you taking time out of your day to visualize it, to sit in the outcome. Because if you're just going around your, you know, day, just working, life admin, all that type of thing, then your mind will wander and it will go back to the feeling of not having it. So if that's the space you're in and the thing that you want you don't have yet, then you definitely need to do that conscious manifestation every day, because your subconscious is doing something else. So I do think that if you haven't got what you want and you have a slight resistance to it, it is absolutely worthwhile doing your manifestation process every day. And as I say, the one that I teach in my Month to Manifest is really simple and really short. It literally takes less than 5 minutes. However, when you get to the point where you have what you want and you're living the life that you want to live, then kind of take it as a, you know, it's a test kind of process. If you're not getting the other things that you're wanting, then maybe you need to sit in that space. But if you're already starting to attract in and you're high vibe, high energy, then the likelihood is you'll just keep attracting more of it and you won't need to do that kind of conscious, focused work. So I hope that answers the question. If you have any more questions, please do DM me and I'll start stacking them up. And getting your questions answered live on the podcast. So today I have brought Holly Matthews to the guest list. Holly Matthews is an author. She's a life coach. She is an actress. She's a podcaster. But most of all, she is founder of the Happy Me Project. And Holly and I met because she did a TED Talk in Newcastle, although she doesn't live in Newcastle, she's from Newcastle, which was fantastic because she got to do a TED Talk in her hometown. And it just so happened that it was a series of TED Talks that I'd went to watch, and Holly was delivering a TED Talk. And it was fantastic. And a lot of what she said resonated in terms of experiences and the fact that she was a life coach. And I was lucky enough that I was sat near the front. And as the universe delivers, we managed to get a conversation. As adorable as she is, she kept in touch. We've messaged on Instagram. We've spoke over the phone. Like, it's been a lovely, lovely connection to have. And so, Holly, hello.
Hello, thank you. What a gorgeous intro. I'm just sat here listening. I'm like taking it in. I'm like, she sounds great. Let's listen to her. It was so lovely. Yeah, because we know the chaos behind the scenes of our own stuff. So I'm like, she sounds fantastic. Yeah. She's not the hot mess. But yeah, she's done great for herself. It's only when somebody lists it all back that you're like, oh yeah, fair play to me. I've done all right. It was gorgeous for us to connect at the TED Talk. And the TED Talk was such a pivotal thing for me because it really was something that was on my vision board, my goals board. You know, it was something that I really wanted to do. I was probably like you as well, no doubt. Like, I was such a geek when it came to like TED Talks. Like, I just love them. And it was just on my list of like, I really want to do a TED Talk. And what happened with it was that I talked about wanting to do a TED Talk. So that's the first step. Talk about the stuff you want. Talked about it to everybody. And I was doing some events in Newcastle, and it was probably about a year after that, but I talked about it at the event. You know, I'm encouraging other people to talk about their stuff they want to do. And it just so happened that somebody that was at one of my events then ended up, her brother was organizing that TED Talk. Beautiful. And he said to her, do you know anyone that wants to do a TED Talk? And she was like, well, I do actually. And I got that message, and it was like the theme of it. What was the theme of it? Because the theme of it was like, it was all about resilience. I can't remember the exact thing, but it was like, it couldn't have been a better topic. I don't know if you remember.
I can't remember, but I know obviously it was very, because the Emily Dean was there and she was talking about her book, which it was all about kind of overcoming. Hers was overcoming adversity, the death of her family, and so there was loads. Yeah. It was definitely more mindset than anything else. It was brilliant.
It was such a good one. And it's something that the topic was right. It was at my old college in Newcastle where I used to go to college. And it couldn't have been more perfect. I don't think I could have said yes to something quicker. And so being able to then meet you at that event and connect with people, it was so lovely. Like, it's such a beautiful thing to be part of, such a beautiful brand. And I definitely walked around just taking pictures all day, like an actual nerd, just like next to the TED site.
I mean, when I get my TED Talk, I'll be all over that. I'll be standing on the T, the E, the D. Yeah. I'll be lay across them all.
I'm never not going to be a nerdy person who gets excited by stuff. The minute we stop being chuffed to bits to do stuff, then we've lost the magic, because I'm still like excited about life and like excited about stuff like that. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I'm like all above it. Oh, I'm so above this. I'd be the same if I went again.
So before we get into all of that amazing stuff and mindset and vision boards and creating your life and carving out your manifestations and your goals, I know you talk about it a lot on your social media, but for anyone who's listening who this is their first introduction to Holly Matthews, I mean, Holly is on Lorraine every other minute. So, do you know what? It'll only be that if you work full time that you've missed it and that you don't watch Lorraine. But tell us a little bit about like your starting point. I know about Hollyoaks. I know about the trauma that you and your girls went through as well. So, but tell the listeners in a nutshell your journey from little Holly at school to where you are now.
Yeah, so I started, little Holly was 11-year-old me starting as a TV actress. So I started in TV when I was really young, and I got that by writing a letter to the producers at Biker Grove Kids TV show, from where we are from.
Well done.
I wrote them a letter and I said, my name is Holly and I am an actress. I affirmed it because I had no doubt in my mind whatsoever, because why would you at 11? I was like, I'm an actress, get me on your TV show, I'll be brilliant. Wrote them this letter, it was said, I'm an actress, I have green eyes and brown hair. It was like, it was very descriptive. It was done in Comic Sans, which is really exciting for everybody. And at the bottom, oh my God, I've got it somewhere because my mum and dad found it on their old computer and they made it onto a canvas for me. So I actually have it.
Of course they did. I love that.
It is hilarious. And it says, I'm not shy one bit, which is good to know, isn't it, when you're employing someone. And at the bottom it says, P.S. Please get write back soon, because I was just dead keen to like for them to write back. So they got me on that TV show after that letter. After a few back and forth of auditions, they wrote me a part in, and I was on TV. I grew up on television, so I grew up 7 years of my my teen years on TV, and that in itself got me involved in self-development, because as you can imagine, there was a lot of stuff going on for me. I was on a platform when nobody had platforms. There was no social media. If you were on telly, it was a big deal. My kids couldn't have couldn't care less right now if I was on TV. They're like, everyone's on TV, mom. Everyone's got a YouTube channel. Who do you think you are? Like, yeah, it's not a big deal. It was then, wasn't it? Right?
Yeah.
No big deal, mom. But it was a big deal back in the day to have that. And I had, you know, I went to a normal working class school in Newcastle, normal, you know, went to school for 6 months of the year and then would come back and forward. So I started to realize, one, that I had huge issues with the way that I looked, because every day I was going in and having a makeup artist correct my face. So I had huge body dysmorphic issues with myself, thought I was an actual ogre that shouldn't be out of the house. And that didn't feel good. And neither did a lot of the self-esteem stuff that I was developing, like because of being on telly. So I started to, honestly, the truth is I got bored of my own nonsense. I got bored of feeling crap. And I decided there must be a way not to feel like this. And I started to explore what that looked like. Bearing in mind, we didn't have the internet. You know, it was the 90s and early 2000s. So we weren't having we had like Encarta. And for people who are my age or older, they will remember Encarta CDs, which gave you like, I don't know, a video of a bear or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, we didn't have the internet. We had to go to the library. And I used to go to the library and I used to get out like hypnosis CDs and try and do self-development stuff when nobody was talking about it. And in that kind of, I guess, exploration, I figured out some stuff that helped me. And a lot of the stuff I was doing were things like affirmations and like writing out, journaling, things like that, meditation. Wow. I did that from young. And then I was still doing all the normal kid stuff. I was going out on the streets with my pals getting drunk and doing what normal Happy kids days. Do. But I was I was secretly meditating. I was a closet meditator.
Nice.
So it was, I did always have self-development in my world. But then I went on doing TV, you know, TV programs, Waterloo Road, Casualty Doctors, all of the stuff. And then signed to Sony, did MTV, Top of the Pops, all of that. Was very much in the entertainment industry. And I didn't think that I would do anything else. In 2014, the very quick bullet-pointed version of all of this, my trauma came when my husband Ross was diagnosed with brain cancer, rare brain cancer, the worst. And we went through 3.5 years of brain cancer diagnosis, chemo, radio, all of the stuff, brain surgeries that come with that. We've got, at this point, 2 young children, and that's all in the mix of that. And I found that self-development then became something that was at the forefront of my mouth, and I was talking about it a lot more because I was having to dig so deep to walk through that stuff. And then in 2017, Ross died of brain cancer. And once again, I was like thrust into this new space and, you know, scrapping around trying to find how do I walk through this, and using all of the tools that really realistically I had been doing for a long, long time. And I actually put, you know, the acting world taught was like my resilience boot camp, you know. Mm-hmm. It was resilience boot camp. Get back up, gotcha. Get back up. And it really, I'm very lucky that I had that, because it wasn't easy breezy before all of the really big life tough stuff. And that took me into making the Happy Me project, which is my brand now. And that was an answer to everybody's messages after my husband died. There was a huge, Ross's death was in the press and it was in national newspapers. And obviously I was on Lorraine a few times talking about it. So there was a lot of eyes on what I was doing. And that meant that people were going, how on earth are you navigating that stuff when I can't even deal with the fact that my kid's been annoying me this morning and the house is a mess?
Yeah.
Like, how? And, you know, yeah, just like you and I have done, they were looking for answers and looking for ways through. And my favorite thing when it comes to self-development is to try and find low-hanging fruit, to try and find the stuff that's like easy wins. Because when we're in our trauma, in the thick of it, we ain't got time for some heavy, weighty stuff. We don't want to do it, but we need something. And so it was all about finding quick and sharp and easy ways to pull people through, as well as doing the deeper stuff. But you also need some right now wins, don't you?
And I think, do you know what it is? It's funny that you say that, because I was thinking about, before we came on the podcast, I was thinking, how would I describe you? And I think in terms of your, what I love about your approach to coaching is it's simplicity. It's that no bullshit kind of, no, like, I, when anyone says to me, oh, such and such has done this and they've done NLP, have you done NLP? I'm like, yeah, but I hated it. Like, it's just too wordy. Like, a lot of the skill set's great, but did a guy deliver it? Who designed that stuff? Because he's literally made it. Like, he will describe a technique that takes about four chapters when I could describe it in about one page, and it's just too much. It's just too much. So that's what I love about your style. I think you get to the point. I think you also kind of have that almost kind of prodding people a little bit to kind of go, you know, you don't need to think like that. Like, what are you doing that for?
I love that.
Stop being ridiculous.
But I will often say, I will definitely say, like, to my clients and stuff, I'm like, I will do exactly that. I will prod you and I will challenge you, and I will say, sometimes I'll say things to get a reaction. It's not, and I don't mean that in a horrible way. I mean that as in just break the habit, break that cycle a little bit. And then, but I'll do that in a way that will, and I'll scoop you up as well. Like, I will scoop you up and I will lovingly cheerlead you, because I want you to win. You know, I'm the same as you. I'm obsessed with helping people win, whatever that looks like.
Obsessed.
That we have like solution minds. Like, I'm always looking for and researching and thinking there's quicker ways to this route. And you know, I'm the same as you. I'm qualified in NLP and stuff as well. And I always found like this is too long a script. This is too long. One, it feels very like long. Why is it so long? Like, it doesn't feel like we need that. And I felt the same. I felt a bit of resistance, and I use parts of the NLP stuff, but I've definitely adapted it, because 100%. it doesn't need to be that
I'm like, why has it even got that long name? It doesn't even have that long name. Just shorten it. It's ridiculous.
Well, it is, and no one knows what it means outside of people who've trained in it. No one.
Completely none. I remember just being like, I thought when I first learned about NLP, I know we're going off track and I'm going to bring us back in a second, but when I first learned about it, my limiting belief came back of me going, oh my God, I'm not smart enough to learn this stuff. Like, this is too much for me. And what I realized was afterwards, no, actually, this stuff is really simple. Somebody's just made it complicated. And it's like,
100%.
It's like when people come to me and they go, yeah, like, I'm just really struggling with this, and this. And immediately I go, brilliant. Like, I can help you with all of that. That's not an issue. Mm-hmm. And I'll go, have you had another therapy before? Yeah, so I saw a therapist for a year, and then I saw this other person for a year. And I'm like, you don't need to see people for a year. Like, if I see you for a year, then what I'm doing is not working. Like, I can sort everything that you listed on paper in 12 sessions. It doesn't need to be a year. If it's a year, it's too complicated.
Well, this is it. And I think sometimes what happens is when people are perpetually following this cycle of seeing different therapists, different things all the time, it's because they're still telling themselves they're broken. And nobody's ever said to them, you don't need fixed. You don't need fixed, you're not broken. You might need some tools to use, but you're not broken. And I think we can, certainly in self-development world, people can get stuck in this cycle. And you're absolutely right. Like, I don't want my clients to stay with me forever and ever and ever. There's different spaces that I, you know, in terms of my one-on-one stuff, I've got a coaching membership, which is different, because the Happy Me Project membership is more like a gym for your mind. That's your upkeep. That's your day. That's your, whether it's meditating or challenging your
setting
mind,
intentions, goals.
That's it. That's a different thing, because that's the upkeep. That's what you and I will do every week. We'll be doing bits and bobs out of that toolbox. But it, you don't, the deeper stuff, you don't need to be doing that for any length of time. And I often have the same. I'll have people that have been doing counseling, or they've been doing other modalities of therapy or working through their stuff. And then we'll do a few sessions, and they're like, oh, nobody's ever said it like that before. And it isn't because I'm special or anything. It's because it's been overcomplicated. And so and nobody's ever called them out on the fact that they're just in a perpetual state of telling themselves they're not good enough. That's the issue. The other stuff that's happened to you, the outside stuff, that's a lot of that's not even in your control. But you telling yourself you're a rubbish human being, that's in your control. We can work on that.
Yeah, and I think... I wonder if the reason why we both come at it from a similar genre, because obviously there's different coaches do different things, and I wonder whether it is that trauma, because I think once you deal with a trauma like that and you realise, Jesus, if I can deal with that, I can deal with anything. Like, you know, the worrying about what ifs kind of don't come into the scenario anymore, because you kind of go, well, hang on a minute. That 16-year-old me who dealt with the suicide of a fiancé, or how old were you when that happened?
When Ross died, I was 32. I was 29 when he was diagnosed.
So your 32-year-old self who managed to support your children, figure out what that looked like, overcome the loss of your soulmate, like, you will never go through anything that tough again. So everything else... is child's play for you coming forward. And that's not to say that shit won't happen to us along the way, and all the stuff we have to deal with.
And we don't get a let off, unfortunately, do we?
It's not that one thing and then that's it, you're done now.
No. That'd be good, wouldn't it? If you could just go, I've had my trauma. I've had mine now. I've got my badge. I've had my trauma. No more, thank you.
I just want the lovely stuff. So tell me then, right, let's get into the good stuff, because Holly's mindset is she's done the work on it. She's working on it with clients. Tell me a little bit about, because I asked you before we came on the podcast, I was like, just so you know, this is a manifestation podcast. I'm pretty sure you do believe in manifestation. You were like, hell yes. And then you just launched into your manifestation story of your book. So I'm guessing you've got loads of good stories. So come on, spill. Oh my gosh. Tell me the one about the book.
I'm spilling them. So the book, let's start with that, because I always knew I would write a book, right? I did. I just knew I would. And that sounds very egocentric. I don't care, right? I knew I would write a book. I've done a lot of stuff. It was to go in a book, right? So I always had this vision of, you know, in the UK, going into Waterstones, the big bookshop, and thinking, right, there's my book in Waterstones. And so when let me just take you back to the first time I went on Lorraine, after I'd done the TV show, the producer came to me and she said, you should totally write a book. Now I said, and I think this in itself is part of the manifestation process, as in, talk about the stuff you want, right? You put 100%. Your order in. So she said to me, you should write a book. And I said, oh, I've already done the proposal. Can I come back on the show when I've written it? I had not written that. I had not written that proposal. I didn't even know what I was doing in a book, right? I was making that up. That was lies. But I said, I thought, I'm just going to say that, because then it'll force me into actually the, you know, action mode. I'll have to do something then. So I put that out there. But again, there was no panic, because I didn't know how to do it. I've never written a book before. I didn't know what the route to that was. But I just thought, right, I'm going to put it on my little notice board. That's what I want to do. I knew I wanted, there were certain non-negotiables for me within that. I wanted it to be with a big publisher. I didn't want to self-publish. No shade either way. I think there's different routes. It's a quicker route if you self-publish, but I wanted to go with a publisher. I wanted that tick in the box of a publisher. So I wanted that. I knew that even though I didn't know how it was going to exactly flow, I knew that I wanted it to be a very flickable book that people could use in their times of difficulty, when they could just read a couple of pages and then that'd be enough to give them something, somewhere to go. Again, so I knew that was important. I wanted it to be, I imagined it in my head, I imagined this white book. I knew it was going to be white. I knew it would be bold font on the front, that it would be really eye-catching. And obviously my brand is black, white, and like a fuchsia pink. So I knew it would probably have that element to it. I could imagine it in my head. I knew how it was going to feel when you opened it. I knew it was going to have pull-out quotes in it. I knew what it was going to feel like. And bear in mind, I didn't design the book. That's not my job. So somebody else does that. And so the whole process of the book, I just thought to myself, I've just got to learn what's the route that I'm, the kind of obvious route. I'm going to talk about the fact I'm writing a book and I'm going to see what happens. Now, what actually happened is I put that on Instagram. I'm writing a book and I put it on Instagram because, again, I was owning my goals. I was saying, this is what I'm going to do. Then what happened is somebody contacted me, a lady called Holly. I mean, she's called Holly for God's sake, even that in itself. Beautiful. I manifested a Holly, right? So she's messaged me. And she said, would you like to put a proposal to me? I work for Bloomsbury Publishing. And I nearly fell off my chair because I knew that Bloomsbury are like the ones that do like Harry Potter and stuff. Like I knew they were big. But I did kind of look up, like, is this Bloomsbury or something? Like, is this actually Bloomsbury? Is this like some, is this a fake one? Is this a snide version? When I realized that it was Bloomsbury, I threw my phone across the room because that's what I do in the blind panic of like, oh my God, I've got to do some stuff. So I panicked. Then I got my shit together again. I was like, right, come on then. We've got to do what's next. But each stage was just what's next? What do I do next? And I didn't have any pressure on myself that this was going to be like, I didn't think, right, it's got to be Bloomsbury or I'll die. I just thought, I know I'm going to get the book out. I've got to find a route. And there was no resistance because of that. I just kept thinking, okay, I've never done this before. I'll stay open to it. I don't know what I'm doing. So let's just put the proposal in. And then it was, you know, send us a sample chapter. Okay, I'll do that. Just do the next thing. Just, I was taking what you call inspired action, I guess, in manifestation. Yes, so I was taking action. I wasn't ignoring it, but I was just not stressing about it. I'd put my order in. I talked about it. And then halfway through 2020 lockdown life, when we're in the thick of homeschooling, whatever the hell that is, and I'm in the thick of that, and I get an email that just says offer on the email.
God, I remember this because we spoke around that time,
because
we hadn't, hadn't we?
Yeah.
Because I was on the...
It was just like...
Yeah, that was unreal. Because I remember going, oh my God, that's amazing. And then you told us how long it takes to actually get it to the publication stage. And I was like, shut
2 years.
Up. 2 years.
2 years. But then, you know, weird, like suddenly that feels really quick because you're so in the thick of doing it and everything. And, as I was just sharing with you before we went on this podcast, I had an event that was essentially a book launch, but it was a restival event where we had a whole day of positive mindset. And it was just lush, had different speakers on and different people. And it was very much bringing the book to life and bringing each chapter to life with activities and things. And we had this huge, it was actually the same size as me, pretty much. Like, I was like an inch taller than it, which is hilarious. I'm only small like you, so we're only little. It was the same size as me, the book, blown up massive. And I remember just looking at it during the restival and just thinking, oh my God, like that is the book I thought about. Because during the process as well, I didn't add this in, but I would visualize the book happening. So I would visualize walking into Waterstones and seeing my book. I would visualize being sat on Lorraine again talking about the book. I would visualize, you know, seeing people with the book. And over the last month, that absolute madness has happened. Like, and I'm seeing all of those visualizations, how I imagined them, come to life. Now, this, for those that are new to your podcast, this is not like, this isn't magic. Like, you can add, well, maybe you think it's magic, I don't know. But it doesn't have to be magic. It's just how things work when you let go of the resistance and the fear and you just go, there'll be a route. And certainly when we're talking about trauma, that's the same when it comes to that, right? It's, there's a route through. You might not have all the answers straight away, but there's a route.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if somebody had said to you before that happened, how would you cope if this happened to you? You'd go, well, I wouldn't be able to. And yet when you're in it, actually, what we are as humans is incredibly powerful. We are way more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And actually, when the shit hits the fan, we cope. It's the stuff in our head we don't cope with. I say this all the time. It's the stuff in our head that we can't cope with. But what I want to ask you, because you're your mindset's pretty fantastic in a sense of you, it's like, and I'm guessing you haven't heard this, but as you're talking, and you're going to love your the comparison I'm going to give you right now, and I've said this on the podcast because it was such a brilliant episode. So Holly Tucker, Holly Tucker from Not on the High Street, she founded it, she's got a podcast. Yes. She interviews Charlotte Tilbury. It's one of the best podcasts I've heard in such a long time. And you need to listen back to it because you sound just like her, right? So Holly said, Holly said to Charlotte, like, could you ever have imagined that you would have the brand that you have now? And she went, yeah. She went, I know that sounds crazy, but yeah, I did imagine it. I totally believe that you will visualize, and I can't remember the terminology she used, so I'm not even going to try and kind of see it over the top of it, but she said something about visualizing and it comes to life, essentially. And she was brought up with, in terms of her back thing, she was brought up with very kind of like, what's the word you would call them? I don't want to call them eccentric parents, but it sounded very much like this amazing like lifestyle. She was brought up in Ibiza. She went to a private school over there. Right. I think her father was an artist, all that type of thing. So you can imagine that it was a lifestyle of you can do anything. So therefore, she doesn't have to work on any limiting beliefs because she just overcame them as she went through the journey because she has parents who embody that. Yeah. So where did Holly's mindset... Okay, good.
Yeah, well, actually, interestingly, I definitely am very lucky in that. Well, one, my parents were punks, so they believed in nonconformity from the beginning, although I don't really remember them being punks. They were. I was very lucky that I do have a really supportive family, you know, Geordie, working class, normal, down to earth, but also don't nail your feet to the ground. Like, my parents very... I mean, I've talked to them about this, and obviously since the book's come out, there's been a lot of conversations around the things I've shared in the book, because my dad was one of my early readers, and he was like, as a writer, like as a reader in it, you know, as a writing piece, it's fantastic. It's really good. And it's really on the money for your audience. As a parent, it's really hard to read some of the chapters because of the things you've shared. And I was there, and maybe I didn't understand, or, but they really did give me that support in that they just let me be. Like, I was a creative oddbod who was allowed to just be that, you know, being, they never stopped me being an actor. When I left doing acting, and I was, you know, when I left the TV show and I was doing singing, there was no, they never put restrictions. They never once said to me, get a plan B. They never said that to me. They didn't, because they knew, one, they knew that I wouldn't do it, because that doesn't really factor into my brain. I'm like, jump in, work it out. This doesn't work. And it is funny because I did share with you before this that I was diagnosed as an adult with ADHD. And it's interesting to look back on that as a, how that looked as a child, because it's blatantly obvious when you look back, just that nobody in the 90s had anything, did they? Nobody had anything, obviously, because nobody knew about stuff. Everyone was fine. Everyone was fine. Everyone's trauma was just real deep.
Nobody was dyslexic. They were just stupid. Like all of them.
Just naughty, stupid, or weird. So I probably sat in the weird category and was allowed to be that. And I think that's dead important. And my dad would often say, the world is your oyster. And he would say to me, don't stay here. Not because he doesn't love Newcastle. He's still there. But what he was trying to say to me was, broaden your horizons. He would say, you know, like, speak to different people, learn about different people, understand different, understandings of the world. And they always gave me space to have that mindset. And I think I've realized, like, even if I look back to when I got that part on Biker Grove when I was a kid, I still do business in the same way. I jump first and work it out afterwards. And I say, and I've got braver with that. You know, there was a time when I was steeped in all of that doubt that you get when you're in secondary school, I guess, where people say to you, who do you think you are? Who does she think she is? And all of that. And I was, there was lots of work that had to be done in that, because I used to self-sabotage a huge amount because, you know, I think as well, coming from a working class area, money was always an issue for me, because I had money as a kid when no one around me had money. I was earning more than some of people's parents around me. I mean, I didn't have access to it because I was a kid.
Yeah.
But it was a weird space because I would get comments, have you got £100 for your dinner money? People were always trying to get money off me. And thankfully, my parents were really good and they protected that for me and, you know, made sure that I had that when I was older. But that brought a lot of stuff for me because there was a lot of negativity attached to money then. There was a lot of negativity attached to me succeeding. And I developed the limiting belief, if I succeed, if I make money, it makes other people uncomfortable.
Not like you, yeah.
And and that's not very nice, is it? Because no one wants to do that. Nobody instinctively wants to be not liked. And so I've had to do loads of work on that. But I really think like the fact of just having that cushion of people around me that go, that's just how she is, leave her be, she'll work it out. Like even if in my chaos, they'll let me work it out. And then I think they now are at a stage where they're like, she probably just will. Like she will find a way through, leave me be.
And you do, and you have, you've got that... you've got that kind of creative mindset where you are always on. Like, I don't think I've ever spoke to you when you haven't been at the level that you're at just on this podcast. And if you know, please do go and follow Holly because she shows up like this every day on her Instagram. And you will get this level every day. And that's because that's inside of you buzzing. Now, so that makes sense then. So you've probably had very few limited beliefs, and the ones that you did, you kind of thought, hang on a minute, I need to work through this shit because this isn't serving me, kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. So tell me then, if there's somebody out there, let's think, who might be listening that might need the support of, say they haven't been through trauma and they are worrying about the what ifs, like, oh my God, but I can't do that. What if this would happen? And they've got that self-doubt, that limiting belief. What would be some key takeaway that you could give them right now that they could take away from this podcast and have as an action? You know, like, I know you did.
Yeah.
And again, go and visit Holly's page because that book launch was something else. I messaged you and I was like, oh my bloody God, so that good. Looked amazing. It was so good.
I'm going to do really something in Newcastle, so you have to come. You have to come to
I'm
that.
Definitely want to come. Definitely want to come. So going back to that then. So I know you had lovely little exercises for people to do. So one exercise or one key takeaway that somebody could go, do you know what? Actually, I don't need to think like this.
Yeah, okay. There's so many, but I'm going to sit on with spot, one. Yeah. It was, but it's okay. So what I would say is one of the things that I would really... First of all, you've got to know what you want. Like, there's no... You can't sit... If a lot of the time, you know, and you'll find this as well, clients will come to me and it's like, well, I don't want to feel like this. Well, that's fine. I know you don't want to feel like that, but what do you want to feel like? Because just not wanting to feel like this isn't an action for our brains. Like, that's not pointing the car anywhere. That's just... I don't want to feel like this. Okay, so what do you... So you really need to work out what you want. Now, you don't necessarily have to know the route to get there, but it could start with... I always think about it like the ingredients of your life. So you want to think about if your life was a lovely pie, what would be the ingredients you would want in that pie? Because if you don't decide... You're going to get dust in there. You're going to get mud and some stones. And it's not going to taste like a very delicious pie. It's going to taste like somebody else just chucked some stuff in there. And that's sometimes what happens to people. And then they come to you or I and they say, I feel lost. And it's because they haven't made any decisions. Now, if you are in a space of going, I just don't know which way to park the car, then my advice to you would be to explore different things, but don't have an end goal on it. Like, don't think, right, if I go to this class or I take this course or I go to this country, then that's going to be the key. Just think to yourself, I'm going to have lots of experiences, I'm going to try different things, and if nothing else, it's going to be a really great story, right? If you're going to do a knitting class, so you're going to go to Bali, or you're going to go to Great Yarmouth and ride a donkey, I don't know, right? You're going to do some stuff, and you're going to explore, and you're not going to have, like, this is the thing, because when we put this is the thing, this is going to be my purpose, that's too big a deal, like, that's too much. You won't try anything, because you'll slip into perfectionist mode then, won't you? So look at what it is that you want first. Get some ingredients, write some stuff down. Some people might call this your values. If we were talking about self-development, you might list of values. But I like to think about it like, what are the ingredients that you need in your life? So for me, freedom. That's one of the biggest like value. I need that ingredient. If somebody tells me what to do, what to wear, I'm out. I don't want to do it. I'm not interested. That would make me sad. I'm going to ask you, actually, I'm going to throw it back to you. What would be an ingredient in your life that you need?
Definitely time for me. I didn't realise I needed that. And I think having my own business, I know there's some bits that I missed out on from my old job. So my old job, I used to do a lot of driving because I covered like half the country. So Scotland out to Birmingham, Ireland, all that. And yeah. I'd go down to London a lot and I'd have a lot of me time. I'd have a lot of travel time, a lot of thinking time. So actually I know I need that thinking time. So I'll tell you what's a difficult day for me. It's a Friday, the irony of it. We're recording this on a Friday because it's a full on day back to back normally. I don't know why clients seem to like a Friday. So it's a full on back to back day. And then I get in and then I've got the little one running up to us, asking us questions, telling us about his day. I've got the teenager coming up and telling us about her day. And then I've got my husband who's kind of like, not that he needs or wants my attention, bless him, but he's there and I need to say something to him. And sometimes I just think, there would have been a nice, if I'd had a longer drive home, I could have got that little bit of space. So what I realised was, on holiday, and I did this last year, we went to Italy last year, and the time last year was we had to, isolate for 5 days, I think it was, because of COVID. And I thought, do you know what, I might just go for a little run, like in a morning, because we've got nothing else to do, we're not rushing to like the pool or whatever. Oh my God, it was the best thing that I've ever done. Like, not the running part, running, but it was just that time. So it was like 40 minutes where I didn't have to talk to anyone. I didn't have to think about anyone else. And I was like, Jesus, this is what I need on holiday every year, which is nuts. I didn't realise I needed it until I had it. So freedom, definitely one thing. Yeah. But how do you, in fact, I was thinking about you with this. How do you get your time? Because you are a single parent. When do you get that break for Holly? Because you're working all the time. Do the kids go to grandparents? Do you have any kind of respite, or is it full on?
They do, but not massive. It's quite full on, and I don't always get that balance right. But my kids are pretty good in that. I say this. This is probably not necessarily true. It depends. They can be pretty good in knowing if I say we have like things that we say in our house, and I'll sometimes say, "Look, I'm at my limit." That is my, I'm at my limit. I'm at my limit, so I need some time. You're going to have to give me some time. And I get really bad sensory overload. So I can, I have to walk around with headphones on a lot in the house because I need that space. I can't concentrate. I can't think if there's noise. So I will have that space. I mean, I get that space day to day because when the kids are at school, I'm fairly solitary in my working life mostly. I try not to be, and that balance is also needed as well. So I do get a fair bit of me time overall, but it is still, my kids are still quite young, and there are lots of challenges with children. You know, you'll know yourself with having children, especially children who've been through trauma. So they do need a lot more handholding perhaps than their peers would sometimes. So I do have to carve the way for that. I do get sometimes I get, you know, grandparents having them and stuff, but at the moment, because of where the kids are at emotionally, it's not always, that doesn't actually feel that comfortable because I know they're not going to love that. And so that doesn't allow me as the parent to switch off that well, because I'm then wanting to like micromanage what's happening for them, knowing that I'm going to have them come back like absolute bulls in china shops. Whereas actually in our space, we have a lot of space to find that calm. But yeah, I think that going back to the initial question of, I think it's finding that in crying up. We went off on a track. Boom. Find important the ingredients though. Because it is important, because people need to also know what other people are. I think it's good to know what other people's ingredients are, because then you can think, maybe, because even you say me time, that's actually really important to me. I'm a confident extrovert, so I need that reboot. Like if I do a whole event, refuel. When I did the rest of all, I was done in for the rest of the week. I had to like not see people because I was peopled out after that. And I love people. I genuinely love hearing people's stories and their stuff. But I know that that drains my battery a little bit. So I think that's important. And I think just the follow up to that is, when you've got a vague idea of, look, I think I need these ingredients, it's looking at what is the story that you are telling yourself about whether you can have that or not. Because what is the story? Because if you're telling yourself the story that is full of limiting beliefs, and I mean, we can, you can do this as an exercise, as in you can write down old bullshit story where I can't have the things that I want, where people like me don't get that, where people like talk like me, look like me, from the area that I'm from, where they can't have those things. That's your bullshit story. You can tell me that, you can tell me that bullshit story all day long, and I'm going to find you somebody else that's had a similar circumstance and is still winning. So we're not going to play that game, right? Because I will call you out on that. So you've got your old bullshit story, then you can look at, okay, so if I were to create a new lovely story where all of my ingredients were met, and I had this lovely gorgeous pie of a life that was full of all of those ingredients, what would the story I would need to tell myself be? What would that look like? And you can write that out, or as like a journal, you could do it as a day in the life of when you've achieved the things you've achieved, you're living that dream life, and you can write that down and you can start to identify with that. Because sometimes we are saying the words as in, I want this life, but we're not connected because we don't really believe we can have it, because we're still sat in the old bullshit story hanging out there.
Yeah.
But we don't need to hang out there. We need to write a new story. And storytelling's really key. Like when I think about the language that we use, like think about the way you describe things, you know, that definitely sits in that NLP space. But language is key. How we talk about a situation, whether it's our trauma or the goals or the things that we want, that will be your reality. That's where you will sit. So really be careful of what the story you are telling and what that looks like.
100%. I'm sure I've done an episode on that. If I haven't, then apologies, but I'm sure I've done an episode on the fact that we might be saying we want certain things. So say, I don't know, say somebody wants a relationship, but then somebody says to you, oh, how are you doing? Yeah, still single. Like, God, yeah, it's just hard.
Yes.
Like, and they talk about it being hard, and they talk about the dating scene being horrible.
Yeah.
They talk about the fact that there's no good men out there or whatever, vice versa. Okay, if you're saying those words out loud, you actually believe them. Therefore, dating will be hard and it will be awful.
Yeah, 100%.
And you will question it when there's a guy comes along. So therefore, it just ends up being this lovely little spiral.
You won't trust him. You won't. Absolutely. No. This is so true. You've got to almost, and I wrote about this in my book, but you've got to think about your brain as if it's the algorithm on TikTok. You know, the algorithm on TikTok is like super potent and it knows more about you than your like nearest and dearest. And it's like, you don't want anyone to say it because you're like, oh my God, like that's me. Like, how does it know? It knows, right? So your brain is the same. So if you keep telling your brain, I'm the single friend, I'm the friend that doesn't succeed, I always, whatever the horrible story you tell, your algorithm in your brain is like, okay, we'll show you more of that then. You want to see more of that? No.
The reticular activating system kicks in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kicks in. It's
and
like,
then it just starts going,
pum, pum, pum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. No, oh my God, there's been some good stuff in this podcast. Some really good stuff in this podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. Like, Jesus, there'll have to be a part two at some point. That was absolutely fantastic. I love that. Holly, you are fantastic. You're definitely one of the life coaches in the life coaching space that I absolutely admire. And I love your style. And I think you appeal to a hell of a lot of people in terms of how you deliver it. So yeah, definitely. I'll put the links to Holly's pages, etc., and everything in there, and you'll definitely get a lot of value when you start following her. So thank you so, so much, Holly.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I recorded that with Holly on Friday and thought to myself, oh, I'll do the outro on Sunday. And as you can hear, my voice is horrific and I've got a day full of clients. So wish me luck. Wish my poor clients luck who've got to listen to this. And yeah, just a big thank you for everyone who's sent in questions, and fingers crossed I won't be croaking on the next episode of the podcast. Have a good one, everyone. Enjoy the sunshine.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unbreakable Mindset podcast with me, your host, Jude Daunt. If you have enjoyed this episode, then please do share with others. And it would mean a huge deal to me if you would rate, review, follow, and subscribe on your podcast app. This will allow the podcast to keep growing and going to new audiences. And if you want to know all the ways in which you can work with me directly, please visit judaunt.coaching.co.uk. The links will be in the show notes.